Ryan, thank you for joining me right here on the Todd Hartley Show. You know, one of the topics I don't talk about enough, but I feel in my heart all the time is about my love for my grandparents. I was partially raised by them, grew up in their home, grew up in their backseat of their car in LA traffic. They imprinted their wisdom on me. I carry it everywhere I go. But I got a call from my grandfather on a Thursday evening that my grandmother was at the hospital, unbeknownst to me, close to passing. He needed me there. So I got to the hospital and we eventually moved her to hospice, and the hospice staff did an incredible job, just loving on her, but really loving on us. Nana passed on that following morning, and Papa took me to the mortuary, the funeral home. We went through all their paperwork. He knew where everything was. He was so organized. But it was important that he made sure that I knew all these people. He also walked around town with me, and as we went to each of the stores in his favorite restaurants, he would stop and say, the busboy is getting my ladder. He's got a project at his house. He needs a ladder. And throughout the next 2 days, and I'm getting chills and emotional telling you this, I might have met 15 people that my grandfather wanted me to know that there were things of his that really belonged to these other people that he had befriended over the years. I slept on the floor of his bed for the next 2 nights at his retirement home because my family had a long history of our grandparents committing suicide, and I wanted to make sure that I was there for him when others weren't. Well, on the second morning, he was telling me he was freezing, so I got up and put a blanket on him. In the middle of me warming his body, he had a heart attack and got him to the hospital, lost him shortly after. We got him to hospice, but hospice cared for me as much as they cared for him. And then I went back to all those people that I just met, gave the ladder, the tool belts, all his extra air filters. His neighbor had the same size air filter. What he did was he prepared me before he left, and not a lot of people do that. Look, this isn't a somber conversation. I think it's a conversation of joy, and I got prepared. And if there's one thing I've learned, it's that success means nothing if you build the wrong foundation around you and you don't prepare. And that's why I'm joined by someone right now who understands what truly matters when everything is slipped away. And that's why Jordan Grummet is with me. He isn't your typical financial expert. He's a hospice doctor who spent years sitting bedside in their final moments, listening to people and their wisdom, like my grandfather. And he turned them and their wisdom into frameworks for living and leading with purpose. He went from internal medicine to hosting an award-winning financial independence podcast and authoring Taking Stock and The Purpose Code. And he's not here to help you die rich. He's here to help you live right. This podcast is brought to you by the Wirebuzz team. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it's because I've spent the past decade growing Wirebuzz into a digital marketing powerhouse designed to maximize clarity in complex sales processes so we can help accelerate revenue. And we do this in three phases. Phase one, we transform your website to function like your best salesperson, and then also incorporate persuasive on-demand sales videos. Now your entire team is aligned on messaging and they're injecting massive clarity into your prospect's head. So your site looks great, but it also has engaging content that helps your team sell on demand 24/7. The next phase, phase two, we train your sales and marketing teams to sell remotely or in person to expand the impact of your sales team. And the third phase is we develop and run targeted ads to your prospects, scale those ads to help you achieve more business results. Sign up for the Wirebuzz Company newsletter to learn more about effective and simple ways to improve your company messaging, attract more digital attention, and ultimately make more sales.
Jordan, thank you so much for joining me. Todd, thank you so much for having me and sharing that story of your grandmother and grandfather. I always say that the suffering of the dying ends when they pass away, but the suffering of the family can remain.
Yeah.
But what I love about your grandfather's story is the exact opposite. It wasn't suffering he left you with. He left you with his gifts, the people he knew and the pieces of himself he could give to those people that would last. And that's legacy and impact, and that's exceedingly positive. So like you said, this could be a really down and depressing conversation, but it can also be a really uplifting one.
Jordan, you are so right. I'm a speaker. I stand on stages in stadiums for Tony Robbins, and the hardest speaking appearance I ever did was eulogizing my two best friends at the same time. Boom. Everything else, people are like, are you nervous? There's 60,000 people out there. And I'm like, no, this is easy compared to what I had to do. You know, I know you get it. Help me understand. There's a moment everything changed. Most entrepreneurs have a pivotal moment that reshapes their values. And for you, it was the loss of your father, who was an oncologist. And how did that experience redefine your relationship, your ambition, your achievement, and even your legacy?
It was everything. I mean, my father died. I was 7 years old. He went to round at the hospital one day, got a severe headache, and passed out. He had a brain aneurysm and was gone a day later. And because I was 7 years old, I saw everything through the personal lens. Like, I figured if something happened to me at seven, it must have been because I was responsible. So I was not good enough. I was not lovable enough. I did something wrong. And so my dad must have passed away. That left a question which I answered with a story. And the story was, if I just became a doctor like my father, if I walked in his footsteps, if I went out and saved the world, I could tragically make up for this loss, this horrible thing that happened. And so that became my sole version of purpose. And when I was a little kid, the only thing I ever wanted to do for a living was become a doctor. And I had a learning disability. I got past that. My mom remarried and we moved. I went to a new high school. I got past that. While everyone was sitting there going to the football game at University of Michigan on Saturday morning, I was sitting in the law library studying. I was going to do whatever it took. And I one day became the doctor that I wanted to be. And guess what happened? Well, one thing is I didn't bring my father back. And the other is I couldn't save everyone. And that created a real crisis in my life when I realized my only version of purpose wasn't actually making me happy.
Incredible how that happens, right? How we get a vantage point and we start to see things differently. And then we start to see what's really important. You spent years at the bedside of people taking their final inventory of life. And that's a sacred place to sit. If you translated their biggest regrets into startup principles, what would every founder urgently need to know before it's too late?
What happens is often we're most afraid to look at those things that are most important to us. And so when I'm talking to dying patients, we often get to this point where they say, I really regret that I never had the energy, courage, or time to, and then it's fill in the blank. And that's different for every person. Some people, it'll be writing that great American novel. Some people, it'll be climbing Mount Everest. Other people, it'll be building that boat or reconnecting with that important person in their life. But the point being is we always think we have more time. And so it's really easy to use the mirage of wealth or our jobs or our careers or even our kids to say, I'm too busy to start really doubling down on what's important to me. And I think the same thing happens with businesses. Business people get so concentrated on, am I going to make this thing run? Am I going to make a lot of money? Am I going to be known by other people in Silicon Valley? All the things that crowd into our head that we put off the things which are most important. Am I going to invest in this thing, this idea, this concept that's deeply important to me? And am I going to build it out? Not to make $1 million, not to be well known, but am I going to put the best I have inside of me out into the world and create the thing that's deeply intentional and important to me? And so I think the dying can teach us to not wait till tomorrow, not let these extraneous things get in the way, and start thinking about what's important today. Because one day you might find yourself in a hospital room and a doctor like I might walk in the door and you might realize that you have days, weeks, or months to live. And by then it might be too late. You may no longer have agency to actually affect the change, to do the important things. So I meet people at the end of life and I try so hard. We try to get them connected to those family members they aren't connected to. We try to get them to die in the place they want to die. if they had dreams, maybe they can't write that novel, but maybe we can introduce them to a local author. And so they can feel a little bit of what it might have been like to do that thing they wanted to do. But what if we could get people who are younger, business people who are just starting out? And what if we could get them to start thinking about these deeply important things now and start acting on them instead of putting it off? Because it's always easier to put off the hard stuff, right? It's always easy to say, well, that really hard thing, I'll do it tomorrow. But the tomorrows run out at some point.
Dr. Grimmett, it's interesting we're having this conversation right now. I had a great weekend and a shitty weekend all at the same time. My dad's 83, and we decided we were going to go to a football game on Saturday. 2 hours out of town. We had a great time together. Then I came home on late Saturday night, almost Sunday, saw the list of work I had to do, and in order for me to get a third of my list accomplished before Monday morning, I sat here at this desk all night, not talking to the most valuable person in my life, my wife, for the whole weekend, basically. We just prioritized the wrong things. You might be preaching to me today. It feels that way. Like, I need it. You know, if you're listening to just the audio, you're missing the tears in my eyes as Jordan's talking. What kind of advice do you have for somebody like me who I want to serve at the maximum level, man? My dad and my wife and my clients.
So the studies have been done, right? People think, what's going to make me happy? Is it going to be wealth? Probably not. Is it going to be career? Probably not. Is it even going to be impact and legacy? Everyone's like, I want to have this big impact and legacy. Probably not. When you look at what really makes people happy, if you've ever seen the Harvard Adult Developmental Health Study, started studying people in the 1930s, studied them for 80 years, did questionnaires, then eventually lab tests, MRIs, EEGs, asked them what made them happy, looked at their income, looked at all sorts of things. And after 80 years of studying these people, they found that the one thing associated with happiness wasn't money, it wasn't your job, it wasn't achievement or success, it was interpersonal relationships. And so the people in your life are probably going to bring you the most happiness. Now, does that mean we should drop everything and only pay attention to our family and friends? Not really. In my version of the world, what you really want to do is you want to find what feels intentional and purposeful to you. Not the thing in which you have this dream of this big audacious goal you're going to meet, but the thing you enjoy doing, the process of doing, the thing that lights you up. And I believe if you do more of what lights you up, if you do more of that kind of good work, a few things are going to happen. One is it's going to connect you to more people, because when people see you lit up doing something that's deeply important to you, they're engaged. They're attracted to you like a moth to a flame. They want to work with you and collaborate with you and build with you. So you're still going to be doing your good work, but you're going to be connected to people. Your family's going to be connected to people. You're going to be a great model for your spouse and your kids. Your kids are going to be watching, for instance, their father doing things that deeply light him up, and you're giving them permission to do the same thing in their lives. And so it's this idea of, are we spending our time doing things that light us up? And when you find yourself on Sunday night getting behind the computer screen and spending 8 hours doing stuff that you don't love, that doesn't light you up, that doesn't excite you, and you're trading that time for things where you could be doing something where you're more deeply engaged and connected, and then you wash, rinse, and repeat that, do that over a career, what you find is you spend more of your time doing process-oriented things you hate in order for a big career goal which you may or may not hit. And what I want to convince people is to flip the switch, which means do more stuff you love on a regular basis and let that bind and connect you to other people. To me, that's what happiness looks like. And I've heard people, I tell this to people all the time, and they're like, yeah, but what about impact legacy? I want to make that $1 billion. I want to, you know, run for president one day. I want to travel to the moon. I get it. I get this idea of chasing impact and legacy, but at least in my own life and in the lives of many people I respect, I've actually found that when they doubled down on what lit them up and connected them to other people, they actually had more significant results than when they grinded away every day to hit that net revenue that was their goal. Or, you know, when they kept doing things where they didn't enjoy the process of doing them in order to reach a goal, they ended up having less impact and legacy. So someone like you, it's always, how do you do the things that light you up? That's going to connect you to your dad and your wife. And if you have kids, your kids. But it's also going to connect you to your colleagues, the people you work with, the people you show up for every day. That's where I think happiness truly lies.
Yeah, it's a beautiful question we all need to be asking ourselves regularly, because it changes over time. Like you, I grew up struggling with learning disabilities and was in all the slow kid classes. And so what lit me up for a long time was proving I didn't belong there.
It's interesting, because does that really light you up? So I often talk about a meaning and a purpose problem, right? So a purpose problem is you're having trouble figuring out what lights you up. But a meaning problem has much more to do with your past. It's the stories you tell yourself about yourself, and it's a journey to enough. So when you're talking about having a learning disability and not feeling enough because you didn't feel smart enough, you can try to purpose your way to feeling good about that, right? You can create, you can achieve, you can build. But unless you go back to the past, we're not talking about present and future anymore. That's a purpose thing, is present and future. We're talking about going back to the past, which is the meaning, and telling yourself a better story about who you were. Until you feel like you were enough back then, a lot of times those actions in the present and future don't actually fill the hole. So if you were not feeling enough because you had a learning disability, and you're like, well, I'm just going to achieve a lot. I'm going to get all these accolades. I'm going to make all sorts of money. I'm going to even help a bunch of people who had the same problem I have. And you think that's going to solve the problem? It isn't. You can't purpose your way to enough. You've got to go back and deal with the meaning issue, which is tell yourself better stories about yourself. You were always enough. So you had a learning disability, but look at how you achieved. Look how you got over that. Look at the hero story you could tell yourself about yourself. And that changes the story. But you are correct in the sense purpose can change. People have all these rigid rules about purpose. It has to be one thing, but not another. It has to have a big impact. It has to be lifelong. Purpose can be long or short. It can be big or small. You can have many versions of purpose or just one. That purpose can change the world, but it certainly doesn't have to. I like that question that I posed to you in the beginning. If you were on your deathbed and asked yourself, what would I really regret never having the energy, courage, or time to do? If you can answer that question, to me, that's the key litmus test for what looks like purpose in your life.
It's beautiful. It's not only powerful, but it's hyper personalized and relevant. And few questions in life are like that.
Yeah. And we all have a different version of purpose. And this is why social media leads us so astray. If you go to social media and TikTok and Instagram and Snapchat, and you see all these idealized versions of people, they're selling you a version of purpose, right? That might be a seven-figure business, that might be six-pack abs, that might be travel all over the world. All these people are trying to sell you their purpose, but that isn't your purpose, that's their purpose. And often they're trying to make money off you, and that's why they're trying to sell you that purpose. And so it rings hollow, and we feel really bad.
The emotion that social media generates inside of me, which I know is different from other people, but I'm always curious if others are feeling it, is, you nailed it, man, hollow. It's empty. On the inside. After I spend too much time there, I feel like I'm drained and there's nothing of like great substance in my heart.
I mean, it's selling you a version of big, audacious purpose, which is often really hard to reach, very anxiety provoking. Most people fail, right? Most people don't end up getting the six-pack abs or having the seven-figure business. It's very hustle culture oriented. And so a lot of people actually come off feeling worse. Why do we have a mental health crisis? Well, one thing is a lot of people don't really know what purpose looks like in their life, and they're trying to take it from their favorite internet influencer, and it's actually making them feel bad.
Your book, The Purpose Code, introduces how founders can use your framework to choose the right opportunities to avoid burnout, like maybe I'm feeling at this exact moment, for not having recovery and love and joy with my wife over the weekend, and help them build companies aligned with who they're becoming, not just what they're earning, but the big vision of who they're becoming and what their purpose is. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. I mean, when you are a founder of a business, basically you are in for the long slog, right? You're in for the 80-hour work weeks. You are in for the ups and downs. It is a setup for burnout. And so how do you not burn out? Well, a really quick way to burn out is to set a series of big audacious goals and pin everything on them, right? So I want this much revenue by end of year one. I want to sell this many products. I want this many employees. These big audacious goals you might reach, but you might not. But if you find yourself doing stuff every day that you don't love doing, let's say you hate being on social media, but you need to reach your sales goals. So you're going to be on social media all day long, making TikToks, being on Instagram, stuff you hate. If you're spending all day doing things you don't like in service of this big audacious goal, which you might or may not reach, you're going to find yourself feeling hollow. Now, let's turn that around. And let's say that you're a founder of a company of something that lights you up. You're excited about it. It fulfills you. So what if you then start filling your day with process-oriented activities, still can be towards a goal, but doing things you love doing that connect you and light you up? What's going to happen? Well, you're going to bring in employees who are also lit up by that shared goal. They're going to see it in you, and they're going to want to be a part of that. And so are you going to work less 80-hour work weeks? No. But you're going to be doing something you really like, surrounded by people who buy in and see your vision and are connected to you. And you're going to build a much more cohesive workplace that nurtures you, that nurtures your employees, and nurtures the business. Who are the founders we always follow? The ones who really end up doing best. They're the ones with vision and passion. It's not that they ask people to work any less or pay them any better. It's that they see people who are living their intention, they're living their purpose, and other people want to glom on and get involved. Because when we see people lit up, when we see founders lit up doing something that they enjoy the process of doing in service of a goal, but also loving the process and being engaged, we can't help but want to spend the extra hour with them. We can't help but want to stay from 6 to 7 at night because things are so exciting, we don't want to miss a thing. This is where purpose, this idea of doing things that light us up, leads to intentional actions, builds momentum, and connects people. And burgeoning businesses need that. They need that more than they need success. They need that more than they need their first clients. They need that more than they need purchase orders. They need a group of engaged, connected people who are excited. And if a founder wants to get there, that's the way they get there.
Wow. So great. You're so good at what you do, my man. That was such a joy to hear you unpack that. Imagine every entrepreneur paused tonight and reflected on just one question that could change their growth strategy, their leadership style, or even how they use their time from now on. What would that question be? Something that we could all take with us from this conversation to help us have greater purpose.
Very easy, especially when it comes to a business. The question I want people to ask them, and I'm telling you, this is going to sound funny to business people, but the question is, how could I be more goal agnostic and also more process oriented? How could I be more goal agnostic and more process oriented? So the problem with lots of businesses, they get so focused on these big audacious goals that it actually knocks them off and leads to burnout and often leads to frustration if they don't reach that goal. So what if we use our goals as intention setters? I intend to build this product. I intend to sell this much. I intend to have this many clients by the end of the year. But then started to do the deep engaged process work. Well, those are my intentions. That's my goal setting. But now I'm going to build that beautiful product. I'm going to hire all the right people. I'm going to brainstorm and nurture them. We're going to create these lead indicators, not the lag indicators, not the goal, but the lead indicators of things that are deeply important to us. And we're going to do them and enjoy the process of doing those things. And guess what? At the end of the year, if we don't reach that goal, but we're 3/4 of the way there, then we succeeded. If we don't reach that goal, but learn that we needed to move in a different direction and started creating that new healthy direction with a new goal, which is a new intention setting, then we've succeeded. If we've bound our employees to us so that they're excited about our direction and engaged and lit up and ready to show up every morning to do the hard work, then we're doing all the important things. Believe it or not, whether we reach the ultimate goal or not, probably doesn't matter. We need to be a little bit more goal agnostic and also more process oriented. I think if we start there, we start building in ways that we didn't foresee. We allow for exponential growth, right? Whenever you set a goal and you work towards that goal, you're really talking about linear growth. But when we use a goal as an intention setting and then dig deeply into the process with the people around us, we actually create the room for exponential growth, which might be linearly in that same direction, but it might be in a different direction. It might lead us completely somewhere else.
You're really good at what you do. It's obvious when I see somebody that has this incredible God-given talent to share verbally, I'm in a really good place. And that was exceptional. Thank you for doing that. He's Dr. Jordan Grumet. He's got a great website. I want you to go visit it. It is Jordan, Grumet, and Grumet is spelled GRUMET.com. Please go learn, check him out, go get his book. Dr. Jordan, thank you so much for joining me right here on a really important conversation on the Toddcast.
Todd, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Yo, that was a powerful episode. And from what we just learned, it should be obvious how you can now implement these lessons in your life to get to the next level. Now, before you bounce, I just have three quick thoughts. First, thank you for taking me on your incredible life journey. Second, if you receive some value from me and you want to pay it forward, it would mean the world to me if you left an honest rating and review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'd be incredibly grateful. And lastly, if you share this episode, whether it be a screenshot or a photo from where you're listening, anything via Instagram stories or LinkedIn, Facebook, or any of the social media sites, just tag me and the guest. I'll repost your content and I'll reply back in the comments because I love mixing it up. In fact, I'd love to share your shout outs in my feed too. Not only are these shout outs really good for you and for me, but they also help us book more amazing guests because they'll be able to see the reach that you're helping to cultivate. This is a way for you to help contribute to the show. So thank you again for listening, and I look forward to earning a regular spot inside that ear of yours. Let's grow.